And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is empowerment. Each of my guests is examining a different aspect of empowerment. My first guest believes the girl power movement that began in the 1980s has gone too far in the 2010s. We discuss the impact of a princess society that's having on our girls from her book, Cinderella Ate My Daughter. My next guest is the world's first female rock and roll tour manager. She worked with the most influential musicians of her era from the years 1968 to 1984. We'll discuss her experiences, her memories of the famous rock stars, and how she became a tour manager from her book titled Miss Odell. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008. Chris Odell worked in the music world as an assistant and a tour manager for the most influential musicians from that era that I just described, 68 to 84. The partial list includes the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, Bob Dylan, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, Linda Ronstadt, Santana, Earth, Wind & Fire, Fleetwood Mac, Eric Clapton, and the list goes on and on and on. Her latest book, Miss Odell, My Hard Days and Long Nights with the Beatles, the Stones, Bob Dylan, Eric Clapton, and the women that they loved, chronicles her life during that time. She's appeared on television, radio, and print media, relating the stories of her years with the Beatles and the Stones. She's appeared in a number of books written by the various groups, I, Me, Mine by George Harrison, Rolling Thunder Logbook by Sam Shepard, and the list goes on and on. She is a licensed professional counselor and a licensed substance abuse counselor. She has a 23-year-old son and lives in Tucson, Arizona, and is joining us from Tucson. Hi, Chris. How are you today?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Well, I am just terrific. Thank you so much for being on our show. I loved your book, mainly because this was the era that I grew up in musically, so I can relate to all of the bands and the people that you are writing about in the book. So, but I want to jump into it more from a personal side with you, if I can. And my first question to you is this. You now have a 23-year-old son, and he picks up this book and he reads it just like the rest of us do. What does your 23-year-old son think of all of this and all that you've done?
Well, actually, he turned 24 now, so he's older.
Oh, my. Okay.
But actually, it was quite interesting to watch because I was, I asked him to read it before it came out.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't want him to hear things from other people about it, you know.
Sure.
So I said, look, I really want you to read this well, just so you aren't surprised. And he said, oh, come on, Mom. You were like 20-something. There's nothing in there that would surprise me. And so I thought, well, okay, that's a pretty healthy attitude.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, after he read it, he never really said anything to me about it. And then I guess he told my husband that he only read the parts about him. So I'm not sure he actually ever read the book, to tell you the truth.
Well, it's interesting because if he looked back on it, now he's a 20-something. He's going through a lot of the same things that you were going through, both emotionally and obviously physically as well, during that time. I'm just surprised, you know, was it really sex, drugs, and rock and roll in the 60s and 70s like everybody depicts it to be?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's
the short answer. Well, it was. You know, we were a really interesting generation, and we didn't have, you know, a lot of the concerns like the STDs of today. We didn't even think about stuff like that. Not that there weren't some around, but I think it was the time when, you know, women felt it wasn't equality. There wasn't equality around it, but it certainly gave women the opportunity to try things that they were never allowed to do before.
Without a doubt. I mean, the advent of the pill opened up sexual promiscuity more to women than it ever had before.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's not to say about the drugs and everything else. Well, it's interesting that you should mention the women, because that is a central theme in your book, is that the women that are associated with these rock stars, and then the romantic triangles that ensued, including some of the Beatles and including a love triangle that include yourself. So tell us about some of these love triangles that were going on in the 60s and 70s with the groups that you were associated with.
Yeah, there's some important things to know, and you can't know it, I think, unless you were there, and I had to think about that because people were surprised by some of the stories that I told. But the reality back then, first of all, a lot of these people were, particularly in the Beatles circle, you know, they weren't allowed to really have contact with a lot of people outside of a very intimate group of people. And I say that because that Brian didn't want, Brian Epstein, their manager, didn't want them to be accessible to people. So they started, and they were pretty young. So, in fact, their intimate circle was really small. And it also got to the point where they didn't know who to trust, and including women. I mean, Patty Boyd told me when she was married to George and we first became friends that, you know, she didn't trust any women because she was sure they all wanted to get to George. And, you know, it took a while to gain her trust. And I was living with them.
Yeah.
So that made it even more complicated. But it almost was easier to be with, if you were going to have an affair or if you were going to you know, meet someone, it was easier to do it within that circle because who's going to talk about it, you know? And so that happened.
All right.
Also, everybody was pretty young still. We were in our 20s.
Sure, and nobody thought about the future or the implications of any of this. But let me go back, because I've had Larry Kane on the show, who is the biographer of John Lennon in his book, Lennon Revealed. And Larry says that John was a notorious womanizer. And even talked about it with him during many of the interviews that they had. So in that closed circle, how could somebody become a womanizer in that tight a circle of friends?
Well, I don't know what period of time he was talking about. I was around from when I came onto the scene, John and Yoko had just become involved. I don't think that would have been true for John after that period of time. I'm sure that was true in the early years when he was with Cynthia. And you know, they all were, because they were traveling, women were throwing themselves, they were crawling at them, they were crawling in windows. I mean, you know, it's pretty hard for men to say no at that point. But I really wouldn't hold that to be true necessarily after that time with Yoko. Nothing that I saw anyway. I mean, yes, there was May Pang, but, you know, in the time that I knew them, you know, that wasn't the case. I don't know what period of time he was talking about.
It was the Yoko years and the May Pang experience that you talked about with the affair that Yoko actually set John up with May Pang.
Right.
But,
you know, it's possible, but I wasn't privy to it.
All right, so from your perspective, it just didn't happen. We're talking to Chris O'Dell, everybody. Her book, Miss O'Dell, My Hard Days and Long Nights with the Beatles, the Stones, Bob Dylan, Eric Clapton, and the women that they loved. Let's go back a little bit to your history just to set the stage for the listeners, because you worked at Apple Records early in your career, but you didn't talk about it much, and certainly there was no mention of a paycheck. What was it like working at Apple in those early years?
Well, it was pretty amazing. I mean, you know, it was being in the place where everybody in the world wished they could, well, maybe not everybody, but many people wished they could be. It was a hub of activity at that point. And in terms of paycheck, oh, my God, I don't even remember what it was, but it wasn't very much. I got paid what everybody else got paid there, you know, that were secretaries, were the women working at Apple. It was probably maybe $50 a week or something. I mean, I don't even remember, but it was enough to pay for a place to live.
So you had your own flat.
I had my own flat, yeah.
But clearly you're not a British by birth, so how did you manage to land the job? How did you even get there in the first place?
Well, I said yes. I learned to say yes early on. And when I met Derek Taylor, who was going back to work for them, he'd been their press agent. He was living in L.A., I was living in L.A., and he said to me, you should come to London and work for Apple while they're getting started. And, you know, at that point, I didn't think that was reasonable or even possible. But he had introduced me to a woman, a friend of his called Terry Garr, who's an actress. And at that point, she was a struggling actress. So I moved in with her, and she's the one that really convinced me to go.
Wow. I mean, I know Terry Garr and I know you. You had been two very, very beautiful blonde women living together in the 1960s.
Thank you.
What an interesting deal. Now, you say that the Beatles were your foot in the door, and that's who really helped you get with other people, the other bands that you eventually managed and took on tour. So what was your experience like with the Beatles? And tell us about, you know, Apple Studio there in London and even the rooftop concert that you were a part of.
Yeah, well, again, it seemed like every day there was some kind of adventure going on there. You know, they were recording downstairs in the basement. They were, you know, going up on the roof and doing a concert once. There was just always something happening around them, and it was really exciting to be there. It was, what I like to compare it to is probably what it's like, you know, when Windows and Microsoft first started, and Google and all of those things were, that are just, you know, Facebook, all the young people and that excitement that goes with it and that only young people can have. That's what it felt like there. It was kind of like the Google of the 60s.
Oh, my goodness. So Google is the new rock and roll is what you're saying. You heard it here first on Brainstorming,
yeah.
Folks. All right. Well, you really have had a splendid career, and at a time when most women traveling with a rock and roll band were groupies, as you alluded to, you were the very first female tour manager. So how'd you grow into that role from being kind of a secretary hanging around Apple Studios? Tell us a little bit about what it's like being a tour manager for a rock and roll group. I mean, that's got to be interesting.
Well, you got to realize if you've got a work resume and your first job is, or your second job is the Beatles, you really kind of, it makes it a lot easier to get in to work with other people. So my second job was the Stones, and I had known Mick from working for the Beatles. So, you know, the entree was there. And I worked for them for a year in Los Angeles and then went on tour with them in 1972. That was the first tour I'd ever done. And I wasn't necessarily a significant part of that tour, but, you know, I didn't have any huge job other than look after Keith and Mick. But when I, you know, that gave me the experience to do it. And then I learned travel, how to do travel and set up itineraries. And so it was just kind of a natural thing. I was working for a travel agent that just did rock and roll tours for a while. She was a friend of mine. And the next thing I know is that, you know, they asked me to go on Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young because I was leaving that job, and Bill Graham's office asked me to do that tour. So I set up all the travel, and then I went to San Francisco, put all the organization of the travel and everything together, and then went on the tour as a tour manager, helping to keep all of that organized.
Wow.
So it was a natural, kind of a natural progression.
Huh. Interesting. Now, do you view yourself as a pioneer because of the work that you did? I mean, you know, you were at the very early edge of the women's movement. Do you view yourself as a pioneer, breaking some ground here for others?
Well, I never really did, but now I do. I didn't at that time because I just, you know, I think I was an opportunist. If I saw an opportunity, I just went for it. And it was so, I wasn't in the state of mind where I was looking to climb any ladders or that. I was looking for it to have a good time. And that was, you know, all of those things were good. I was also a very, very conscientious and good worker. And so to do things like organizing tours of 100 and some people, you know, worked right into my abilities.
Your skill set, sure.
Yeah, that was just perfect. So, you know, and I loved it. It was hard work. It was really, really hard work. But as I looked back on it and realized that no other woman had really been doing that, and I don't think, I've been told since then by people who are still in the business, there still aren't a lot of women doing it.
Interesting. We're talking to Chris O'Dell, author of the book Miss O'Dell, My Hard Days and Long Nights with the Beatles, the Stones, Bob Dylan, Eric Clapton, and the women that they loved. And I've got to ask you to reveal the dirt, Chris. Who was the hardest band to manage? I mean, I have these visions of furniture being tossed through hotel windows on the 20th floor, burning piles of bed sheets and that kind of thing. What was the hardest band to manage?
I think the hardest band was probably Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, but not because they were destructive, because they were four people reuniting. It was a reunion tour, and so each of them had really kind of gone off on their own to a degree, had their own crews, had their own staff, and to coordinate them as a whole became really, really difficult. And it was also the first tour I did as a tour manager. So, you know, even though I liked all of them and they were really nice, you know, that was still, there were a lot of difficulties within that. The Stones I worked for, and touring with them was madness. I mean, that was pure madness, but I already had worked for them for a while, so I knew their madness.
You knew what to expect.
It was a familiar madness. Bob Dylan was really easy to work for, and that was really probably one of my favorite tours.
Oh, that is great. We're talking to Chris O'Dell, everybody. Her book, Miss O'Dell. Chris, George Harrison credits you with turning him on to Jeff Lynne of ELO. And then that turned out to be a very lasting friendship. So in a way, you're the founder of the Traveling Wilburys. So how did you connect George Harrison with Jeff Lynne? What did you see as the possible connection between those two very disparate personalities?
Well, you know, I was living in Germany in the early 80s, and I was working for a promoter there, and I learned German real quick so I could go out on the tours with the bands that came from England and America and kind of translate and be a tour manager for them. And I traveled with ELO, and I'd never been into ELO. I kind of saw them as a, you know, kind of like, I don't know, bubblegum group. And then when I listened to them for the first time, you know, when they were on stage, the first night, the first show, I was amazed. Number one, I was amazed at how many hits they had that I didn't know were theirs. And number two, as I got to know them, I just found Jeff Lynne fascinating. He was just fascinating. I never met anyone who could wear sunglasses all night, you know, and I liked him. He was very intense, but I really liked working with the band. And during that tour, or right after that tour, I went back to London, to England, and I stayed with George and Olivia. And I told him, I said, "Oh my God, you really ought to know Jeff Lynne. He's an incredible, intelligent musician." And you know, he didn't know anything about him at that point. But they did get to know each other, and George later said, "You were right." You know, now he's my best friend.
That's great. We've been talking to Chris O'Dell, everybody, author of the book, Miss O'Dell, My Hard Days and Long Nights with the Beatles, the Stones, Bob Dylan, Eric Clapton, and the Women They Love. If you like rock and roll, if you are a fan of rock and roll history, you're definitely going to want to pick up this book, learn about the inner circle of the Beatles, the inner circle of the Rolling Stones, the relationships that all of these people had. Chris, if people want to learn more about you, they like the sound of your voice, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, I have a website, missodell.com, would be there. I'm actually about to change it to make it a little bit more interactive, but that's the first place to start. And also, I'm on Facebook.
All right, on Facebook and missodell.com. Chris, it's a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming. We'll talk to you down the road.
It's been my pleasure.
It's my pleasure, too. Take care.
Bye-bye.